Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day, thanks to Vanessa from Banksia, and welcome aboard the Starship Zero G science fiction, fantasy and historical radio for episode number 1579 entitled There's No Place Like Holmes. Our podcast title is Not a Pod 2, and I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
And we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land of the Wurundjeri on which we gather today and broadcast from and to. We would also like to pay our respects to the elders past, present and future. And all of those are encompassed in Doctor Who. Missing episodes? As we all know, the original videotape / film copies of many episodes.
Yes.
Of the Beeb's long-running time and space-travelling series Doctor Who and other now classic TV shows were routinely tossed out of their archives, such as they were, between 1967 and 1978, a policy formed by storage space shortage and a bewildering array of other reasons, which I'm not going into. Massive mistake in hindsight, of course, which the BBC and Whovian fans have partly reversed in a now long-term global search for remnant copies of the last Hartnell, Troughton and Pertwee-era episodes. And just under 100 of roughly 250 episodes remain lost, the others now having been restored in full or partly mostly from private collections or from the archives of overseas broadcasters like us.
Yes.
Or at least the ABC, the Doctor Who was sold to. I think the last big haul was from a Nigerian television station. And some serials have been patched together using animation, surviving footage, still images, soundtrack recordings, which have all survived in one form or another. And someday I will guarantee AI interpolation. Pardon my recap there. You could skip the recap if you could find the button. But it's a lead into the news that two more missing episodes have been recovered after being found by the cinema charity Film is Fabulous.
Wow.
They were wrapped in plastic in a cardboard box that was part of a late film buff's collection.
Gosh.
The two 16mm film tele recordings, so these are made by pointing a cine camera at the television screen, which was a common practice back then. There are two episodes, The Nightmare Begins and Devil's Planet from the first Doctor Who 1965 produced 12-part serial, The Dalek Master Plan. Most of the rest of that's still missing. These episodes will be shown on the BBC's iPlay platform this Easter, which is fantastic news for Whovians.
Wow.
And I note with a grin, as always, there are rumours of more to come.
Do you think they'll end up finding them all?
Yes. I think that's probably an easy one, even if they have to send a starship out there to catch the broadcasts.
It's pretty amazing decades later to be finding these, like, archaeological imprints of culture past.
Yeah.
And I mean, there'll be so much lost media, lost to time, but I guess because it's such an enduring property.
But it's Doctor Who, so time will tell.
Yes, indeed.
The main show is still on hold after the recent end of the production collaboration between the BBC and Disney. After two seasons of new Doctor Who were created, the 5-episode miniseries spin-off The War Between the Land and the Sea premiered on BBC One in 2025 in December and is scheduled to be released on Disney Plus sometime in 2026. And speaking of announcements. You can't stop the signal. After weeks of Firefly star, and The Rookie too, actually stars in that, Nathan Fillion teasing us with social media clips of him knocking on his former shipmate's front doors and cryptically implying it's time.
And much speculation to boot. We indeed speculated last week on what it might be. And I think, Rob, you took a visit to the future and came back with the on-the-money guess.
They announced it at the awesome convention in Washington, D.C., which is probably the only good news we've had out of Washington. And we'll also be featured on the Nathan Fillion Alan Tudyk podcast, Once We Were Spacemen. The Joss Whedon-created cult classic Space Eastern Western is being revived as a animated project.
Yes. Which seems really the only viable path forward for a continuation this many years later.
Yeah. It's helmed by Mark Guggenheim, who was a showrunner on Arrow, and Tara Butters from Marvel's Agent Carter, which is a great show, by the way, the latter. It is set between the original single season of the show and the movie Serenity, which means that Alan Tudyk's character, Wash, who was killed in the movie, spoilers, is still alive.
Amazing.
I don't know about the character of Shepherd Book because he was played by the late Ron Glass. They could obviously recast his voice, or else they could just have him absent, as he was in the movie, actually. Fillion's own Collision 33 company is developing this with 20th Television Animation and Shadow Machine. Shadow Machine are doing the visuals, basically. They did parts of Robot Chicken, The Shivering Truth, Titan Maximum for Adult Swim, and afterwards worked on BoJack Horseman. So no streaming service or production date markers have been announced, and this is early days, so it's kind of being pitched, really.
Yeah, so I saw a clip that was on the podcast's Instagram page.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, basically saying that Fillion's pitching this idea, he's got sort of the rights and the blessing of Joss Whedon and sort of all the bits pulled together, but what they need to do now is find a home for it, and so they're really looking for a lot of fan support and vocal, you know, kind of likes and reposts and commenting to show that this is something that people want, so they can get a streaming service or a network to take it on and make it.
Look, it'd be one of those ones at Disney Plus, since Disney Plus and 20th Century Fox had the rights. You know, that would be the obvious thing to pitch for, but it's their show, so they go where they want to. So check out the Once We Were Spacemen Instagram page because, you know, and just like it.
Yeah, yeah. I threw it a like, and I think if you're excited about it, it's also a great time to rewatch Firefly, I would think. But yeah, I'm pleased that it wasn't sort of just some middling news about like a celebrity table read or something, and then it's some chunky, some meaty good news. Yeah. So we'll see how that pans out, I guess.
Well, I'd love to hear all of the cast in one episode on the podcast talking about it. However, they are individually all appearing on that podcast as they.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a decent run of PR stuff appearing on the podcast to help.
What they call it a codpast.
Promote this.
A codpast. a codpast. Okay, now, I'm going all Victorian here, and there's a reason for that. Young Sherlock, which has dropped on, where is that actually?
It's Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, right. Yep. Okay, so this is created by Matthew Parkhill, developed by Peter Harness, and also Guy Ritchie.
Yes, he's involved and directs the first episode.
This is the all eight episodes have dropped. I have watched all eight episodes. Which is probably why I'm falling into the cant. And not to be confused with the Barry Levinson-directed young Sherlock Holmes Amblin Entertainment movie from 85, which starred an equally young Nicholas Rowe in the title role. Matthew Parkhill, known for working on Deep State, Nautilus, the Captain Nemo thing, Primeval, and also something called Rogue. He is an English playwright, also adapted Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. But most known for Geekst, for working from 2014 to 2018, writing stories for the Peter Capaldi 12th Doctor era of Doctor Who. And he also did that pretty ordinary adaptation of The War of the Worlds for BBC One and back in 2019. Guy Ritchie, of course. Well,
he's already had a run at Holmes.
A bit of a run at Holmes, a gallop at Holmes, with his two Sherlock Holmes movies. You know, the first one in about 2009, I think, roughly, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s big time, because he plays Holmes in that. And Jude Law is the Watson,
yes.
So this actually has nothing technically to do. It's not a prequel to those.
No.
It is based on some other source material, some books. And so therefore, but I still feel at the same time it's like the spiritual prequel.
The energy is the same, I would say. And I mean, obviously Guy Ritchie's involvement, but you're right, it's not strictly a prequel to those films. But I'd say if you enjoyed how they portrayed the home's energy in those movies, you'd like what the show's doing.
I think that's a good take on it. It's got that same pacing, a lot of Ritchie's televisual tropes.
Yeah. It's, you know, a bit of action, lots of kind of wry comedy acting, but it's pretty fast-paced.
Some contemporary needle drops and not 7% solution ones.
And it's quite, yeah, I think the mood that it's got going for it feels more contemporary, even though it's obviously
Victorian. He's had a bit of a bumpy ride at the box office, Richie. You know,
yes.
You know, with King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and, well, the not very good streaming movie, Fountain of Youth.
That was so terrible.
But, you know, he still had some hits. I mean, he couldn't really go wrong with it, but he did a great live-action adaptation of Aladdin. I thought that was really good.
I actually didn't see that one.
Mm. And he also had Man from U.N.C.L.E., which we enjoyed.
Yes, we did, yes. Yeah.
You know, but this...
You know, I... Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone has hits and misses. I think it doesn't surprise me that Richie's thriving in this kind of area with this show, this kind of show. I think this is clearly what he enjoys.
It's based upon the, well, loosely inspired by the young Sherlock Holmes books by Andrew Lane, who also wrote for Doctor Who stories as well in The Big Finish and the audio stuff and some other spin-offs and stuff. So, you know, this all feels like the kind of territory that we need to have.
Yes.
For this adaptation. So let's have a track from it. Which one will we go with first?
Let's introduce it with a bit of Young Sherlock from the composer Chris Benstead, who has done the score for Young Sherlock on Amazon Prime.
Zero G is fun, as you were.
And what we were doing was looking at Young Sherlock, the new Sherlock Holmes property that has popped up on Amazon Prime, and that there was the track Young Sherlock by composer Chris Benstead, who's doing the score for the show, which is taking kind of a chunk of Sherlock Holmes's life that we don't ordinarily get to see, which is him as a young man, and a very strapping, handsome 19-year-old. And very early in the show, first episode, we very much set up the idea that Holmes likes to get into mischief, but it's the kind of mischief because he's trying to challenge himself, either learn new skills or, you know, he never really wants to get into trouble, but he's constantly coming up against situations that land him in a little bit of hot water. And it's no spoiler to say when we're introduced to him, he's been thrown in the slammer for 6 months, I believe.
For pickpocketing,
which he did as a challenge to himself. I mean, you know.
He could have been transported.
And that was dangled. That was on the table. But no, he is sort of bailed out by Brother Mycroft and then presented with kind of his next chapter, which is at Oxford University. Mm. And now the gig isn't all that Sherlock had sort of assumed when he was told he was going off to Oxford. He assumed because, you know, obviously, as we know, he's a very cerebral character. He thought that he'd be taking the role of, you know, a learned student, relaxing on the lawn, soaking up knowledge, etc. But no, it's not quite that. So he gets a bit of a rude shock when he arrives at Oxford to find that he will be actually taking a role on the staff.
And not a porter or anything, is elevated.
Not a high role like porter.
That's aspirational.
No, what's his role called again?
Scout, I think.
Yes.
Scout, I think.
Basically getting cups of tea, emptying rubbish bins, but all the more to be in rooms where things happen and for overhearing and for still plenty of opportunity to get into mischief. So this is sort of the pitch of the show where young Sherlock at Oxford, of course, he comes up again. It's a little bit Goodwill Hunting coded. He has his opportunity to sort of show that he's got more to him than what might be at first appearance. Comes up against, you know, the entitled students that are attending there, chances to prove himself, get into a little bit of trouble as well. And also meet, of course, some of the Sherlock Holmes iconic characters. He will cross paths with them as well in rather quick fashion, actually. We get introduced to quite several of them in the very first episode. And, of course, a case unfolds quite quickly.
How surprising.
And, yes, Holmes is thrown right into the middle of it and given a good chance to start deducing things.
Yes, so is the ratiocination is heavily involved in this. Okay, so who are the peoples in this? Hero finds... Yes, one of those finds. Mm-hmm. Tiffin. What a great name.
I know.
He's playing Sherlock. He's 19 years old. 19 years old. It's not a very great age for him. And he's a smart-ass loose cannon, basically.
Yeah, that's such a great summary.
And, well, it's a free-barreled word, just like his name. We've seen him before in the Harry Potter movies,
mm-hmm.
where he played Tom Riddle.
Mm-hmm. I think the second Tom Riddle, right, because mm-hmm. there were two.
And, of course, the Fiennes family also supplies Joseph, his uncle or great-uncle or something like that, who is also in this show.
Mm, yes.
Anyway, I actually saw him Hero, in The Woman King, Viola Davis's vehicle, where he played one of the characters in that, who was sympathetic sort of to the families in that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, and speaking of families, this is the main point for the Sherlock character in this film, apart from him being a smartass, he's mm-hmm. also suffering family grief.
Yes.
The drowning of the younger sister Beatrice, mm-hmm. or Beatrice, mm-hmm. not Enola.
No.
But Beatrice. And this has informed his entire life since then and the entire life of the Holmes family as well.
Yes, yes.
It's a key point. And in fact, I think it's mentioned in the warnings at the start of the show, family violence.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look out. That is there. I think he plays Holmes very well, actually, at that age.
I agree. I think I was a little dubious about the actor because it's big shoes to fill as well. I mean, it's such an iconic role. But I think the energy he brings is great. Like, it's just smarmy enough. It's just smart alecky enough, but very likable, very watchable.
And he evolves. I can tell you I'd this, over the eight episodes, he evolves.
I do, and you can see little glimmers of him being able to tackle sort of more of that depth in the little hints you start to get about his family background and his interactions with his mother and so on.
And one of the reasons that he is evolving is because he's in a bromance with a school friend, met at Oxford, Donal Finn, the Irish actor who was in the Wheel of Time series, which was also on Prime. Mm-hmm. He played a character called Matt Carthon. Donald is playing James Moriarty.
Ah, yes.
Not a professor at this stage.
No.
But clearly very interested in mathematics and chicanery.
Mm-hmm. And so they're a good match.
this is actually, in some respects, Donald overshadows Hero.
Yeah, I will say he's clearly bringing a lot of the presence here. He's fantastic in all of his scenes.
He is, in this, he's witty, cynical. I was going to call it whittical. Well, that's not a bad conflagration. He's slightly embittered and growingly so.
You can start to see the little breadcrumbs of how they will split.
Look, it's partly his own broken family, which is hinted at, and also the fact that he's Irish, trying to get on in Oxford. Mm-hmm. So there are issues there.
Yeah.
And you can just see, and he's on a scholarship too, and that's always a bad thing in
this time of
snooty schools.
Yes, yes.
He's there as Sherlock's new friend. Mm-hmm. He's a physical scrapper, much, much better at fighting than Sherlock is at this stage.
And that's so great too. That's another breadcrumb of you start to see hints of maybe where Sherlock's going to...
Well,
they'll share skills perhaps.
We know that Sherlock in the canon is actually a bit of a martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Guy Ritchie movies, he does it scientifically.
Yeah.
And you can see him maybe forming that up in here, this.
I think that's sort of, as you were saying before, this isn't a direct prequel, but it's definitely taking the same kind of a line of the type of Sherlock as the other Guy Ritchie movies.
I shouldn't take away from Hero's interpretation of Holmes. I think it's really critical in this, the bromance that they've got going with Moriarty. And which is astonishing and, eye-opening and all those things, but done with great engaging passion in terms of the friendship is real. It's there on screen.
It's great to get to see that part of the home story too, I think.
And, of course, they take the mickey out of each other mercilessly because they're friends.
Yeah.
Okay, another character in this who slides into the narrative is Princess Xuan. She's... she also plays a dual role in this, actually. So, she also plays. It's kind of a. I won't go into that because I might give too much away. She's a scholar and a martial artist, of course.
Of course.
The actress Zin Seng was born in Taiwan and is also a martial artist as well, so that's handy. We've seen her before in the Free Body Problem.
Ah.
And, you know, so she knows exactly what she's doing. She's got great presence. Mm-hmm. She does the requisite physical aspects of the martial arts very well, I thought.
Yep.
Very convincing.
Yep.
What do I know? But it looked good.
Yeah. Early on we get some good fight scenes from her.
But she also plays it cheekily, the character. She kind of stands in for the classic Sherlock Holmes character of Irene Adler, I feel.
Yes.
There's that sort of going on there.
Yep. Smart, but strong-willed, feisty. Mm. Yeah.
We have multiple agendas, shall we say.
Ooh.
In this story.
Interesting.
And then you get into the Holmesian family. Joseph Fiennes playing Silas.
Makes sense.
Mycroft Sherlock's and Beatrice's father.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him before in so many things, I don't need to go through that. But I do remember him as Merlin in the short-lived Cabalot series.
Oh.
And, of course, he's got a major role in The Handmaid's Tale as well.
Mm.
But, you know, an American Horror Story. I shouldn't pass that one by because it's a genre. He is a character in this.
Okay.
With his own agendas as well.
Mm-hmm.
Look, he, like the others, is also affected by the Beatrice tragedy in all sorts of ways.
Okay.
Can you buy him as the sire of the Holmes line? Yeah.
Okay.
He's got that same overwhelmingly egotistical intellect
mm-hmm.
that the family seems to manifest.
Mm-mm-mm.
And, of course, you've mentioned Mycroft as well.
Played by Max Irons.
Yes. Older brother of Sherlock and Beatrice.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him before in Red Riding Hood in 2011 and The Host, but in 2013. Yeah, he's good. He's solid. He's got the straight part in this, really.
Yeah.
He has some hidden depths that, shall we say, are plumbed later on in the show.
And, yes, he is son of Jeremy.
Yeah.
So we've got a little bit of a family thing going on in here, for sure.
I wouldn't call it Nepo Holmes, but, you know. Also in the family is, who is it?
The mother?
The mother, yes.
Cordelia.
Playing Cordelia. Natasha McElhone is playing Cordelia, who is also deeply troubled by the whole family tragedy.
Mm-hmm,
I've seen her before in The Truman Show, Love's Labour's Lost, that's a brand new one. She played Lady Romsey in The Crown. And does a lot of voices too for video games like Castlevania and so on.
You definitely recognise her face. When she came on screen, I was like, I recognise you, but I can't put my finger on what your name is right now.
Now, I'll give her all credit for taking a role that could have been a thankless task.
Yeah.
Because when it opens, we know she's been institutionalised. And you could have seen her as just like the absent mother or the troubled woman in what the
could have been very 2D.
Yeah, but it goes way beyond that, and all credit to them for doing that, for that actress. And she's a fine presence in the film. All of the people who aren't fines are also fine.
Casting seems really interesting, I think.
Yeah. And we have Colin Firth.
Yes.
The magnificent name of Sir Bucephalus Hodge.
Oh, so good. So good.
He is just such a snark in this. He has a lot of fun.
He's enjoying himself. I think that's a bit of fun casting there for sure. Mm.
And let's hear a bit of music too.
Yeah. Let's go with James Moriarty, the other half of our iconic duo. Again, this is by Chris Benstead and it's from the Young Sherlock series.
Hello, this is Wendy Padbury. I played Zoe Herriot on Doctor Who and Sue Craig on Free Wheelers. You're listening to Zero G on 3RRFM. Zero G? Well, I'm quite sure that doesn't add up.
That was James Moriarty, and that was composed by Chris Benstead, and that's from the Young Sherlock soundtrack, which is a new Sherlock Holmes-focused show on Amazon Prime, but this time it is looking at Holmes's life as a 19-year-old getting up to mischief at Oxford.
Mm. And other places too, because this show is an international production or a reasonable facsimile thereof. Spain, I think, might have been the place because they get about to Constantinople and Paris and all sorts of places.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Because you've watched all of... What's your take after having seen all eight episodes?
Look, it's extremely watchable. It's not faithful to the novels of neither of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle or Andrew Lyons, but that's all right. I like a good, spirited, interesting, offbeat angle on Holmes.
Like it's an interpretation rather than a strict adaptation.
Yeah, absolutely. All of those. There are Easter eggs, both obvious and subtle. They really lean upon Baker Street irregular street urchin sort of reference at one stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then more subtly, you have to stop and think about the fact that honeycombs and beehives play a part in this story too.
Okay.
Which, of course, is Holmes' retirement package. and, you know, there are the dialogue is snappy and arch, yeah. I thought, all the way through.
It's quite well scripted.
We mentioned that there are needle drops contemporary as well as in the period of the show. They're excellent, excellent costumes.
It looks fantastic. Like the sets, the production design, it feels very rich. Like they've really made an effort to.
Yeah, it looks like it cost a packet.
To make, yes, it looks expensive.
It's all that pickpocketing that Holmes does.
Indeed.
Shout out to Jani Temin, who does the. The costumes for this, we've seen her work before in Harry Potter and some of the Bond films too. Wow, just
it looks
they funny. Support the characters, and I do not mean just in a corsetry way. They tell the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I found it to also be in this strange way, like very watchable and cozy. Like I think it's just pitched at the right level of challenge, interesting, engaging and watchable, but just fun as well.
I must admit there are some things that stretch credibility, but that's okay.
Like wow.
The characters do seem to find their amazing new clothing and changes of clothing at their easiest convenience.
But that's so fun. That's all part of it, you know.
This is like, who's paying for this? Is Mycroft shelling this out? Well, he works for the government.
Poor, long-suffering Mycroft.
And there is a tendency for people to survive rather large explosions at very close proximity.
I'm very fine with some convenient survival.
CGI Richie, I guess. There are lots of twists and turns.
Okay.
So look out for that. I did enjoy it. I'm sitting there thinking, oh, am I going to be like this old Sherlockian defending the canon to the death? No, not at all. It's just fun. Treat it as fun and you're probably all right. The pacing goes a bit funny at some stages, speaking of fun, but... overall, I'm with it.
Okay.
I think, as you were saying before, I think that Guy Ritchie has dialed back on some of his tropes.
Yes. I do fatigue sometimes of, for example, in the Holmes movies that he directed, it would get very aggressive with a lot of very fast zooms and zipping around, which can be great stylistically to kind of get a mood going. But then if you do it a few times too many... Yeah. I'm fatigued. I'm sort of over it. Whereas here the deduction and setting up that kind of mindset was a lot more subtle. We were not as much zipping around, not as much Richie with a capital R. Like he dialed it back a bit.
Yeah, so. Which I think is all to the good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it lets other things like the acting and the script and the story shine more without it just being all style over substance.
But it's clear that they need Moriarty here to be Sherlock's right-hand man.
Yeah, I think it hinges on that, right? Like what they're doing here is that
actually duo. It's a running joke about who's the sidekick in this. It is the new young Sherlock series. It's on Amazon Prime. 8 episodes have dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I thought it was a romp.
Yeah.
Any reservations I have about it, I just throw off the carriage.
I've watched the first episode and I'll be continuing. And to be honest, in this saturated world where there's so much out there, that does say a lot. So
is it ripe for a second season? Yeah, easily.
You reckon they'll give it more?
Yeah,
hopefully.
They can do that. Because they've got very young actors. Well, at least one of them is youngish. Hero is youngish. The other guy, not quite so much.
Mm.
Playing 19-year-olds, you know, but yeah, well.
They could, yeah.
Yeah, one of them is going to age out.
They've probably got a season or two left.
Yeah. I'd be in conflict with Enola Holmes.
Well, that's another thing too is, you've got things like Enola Holmes and Elementary, all that take its own unique take on Sherlock Holmes. And this is just another version.
Hero's going to have to lift some serious weights to end up being Henry Cavill's Holmes.
Yes, he's not quite as buff or as wide in the shoulders as Henry Cavill.
Yeah, but he could easily do that sort of stringy, laconic.
I think that fits the character better, to be honest. Yeah. I think it makes more sense. But look, who am I? Who am I to say? But yeah, I guess it's a yeah from us.
Yeah. We'll go to, although it's not a sure. I think somebody used the word sure in it in that sense of yeah, sure. And I thought, oh, that didn't quite sound right.
Not quite right.
But don't call me Shirley. Okay, we'll have a track here.
Yeah. Should we listen to one more from the score? It's quite a good score. This one is Follow the Fiddler.
Yes.
And that's just going to take us out of our little chat about young Sherlock.
Maps. Mondays from 4 p.m. with me, Phoebe Squared. Hanging with friends, driving your car, stuck in traffic, maps are always there to guide the way. Join me as we lead from the familiar to the unexplored, making connections between old and new favourite tracks. Come on, let's hang. You know you wanna. Tune in to Maps by FM Digital online, on demand or via the app.
Just there, we heard a little taste of Jubilife Village, which is from Pokemon Legends Arceus. And I played that to get us in the mood for what I'm going to talk about next. But before that, we did hear Follow the Fiddler by Chris Benstead, who's a longtime collaborator with Guy Ritchie. He's worked on quite a lot of his films, all the way back to The Gentleman 2019. Mm. Makes sense as well, because I think the quality of the score for Young Sherlock has the same kind of energy as sort of his previous Ritchie compositions.
Not exactly Guy Ritchie's muse, but his muso.
Yeah, exactly. A common director-composer duo. So now I'm going to talk about a game that has taken over my life, me and many others. It is a Pokemon game, as you may have guessed from the little bit of Pokemon music that I played, and it's Pokemon Pocopia.
You've caught it all.
There's 300 to attract in the game, and I am nowhere near 300. I mean, challenge accepted, though. So Pocopia is a cozy Pokemon world-building and crafting life simulator. This is the first time that there's been a Pokemon game like this. It's kind of pitched as a good way to describe it would be Animal Crossing with a bit of Minecraft and Pokemon. Okay. It's developed by Game Freak and Koei Tecmo's Omega Force, and it is only available on the Nintendo Switch 2.
Ah.
So this is Nintendo's very clear bid to get units of that console moving, and it worked on me because I did not have a Switch 2, and then I got one.
You bought a console.
I could play this game. This is how deep I am in the Pokemon lore, and also how much I wanted to play this game. As I mentioned, it is kind of a spin-off. So usually the mainline Pokemon games aren't life sims like this. This is the first time they've done something like this. In the past, they've made things like Arceus, which was trying to emulate like a Zelda type thing. And this is clearly trying to emulate an Animal Crossing style of game. It's only been out for a short time, already very popular and well-rated, and not just by me, by many. So, okay, Pocopia, where to begin? You play as Ditto. Already we're off on a great foot because Ditto is one of my favorite Pokemon. So you awake, you're awoken rather, rudely, I believe, on a deserted island full of all these ruins and kind of fragments of a life past. It's seemingly empty of both Pokemon and humans. Looking for meaning, you do take the shape of your former trainer because you find your trainer's old Pokedex. So you take on the form of your old trainer because you're a Ditto and you can transform, in case people aren't familiar with Ditto's powers. So you transform yourself into your old trainer, which is a bit sad when you really interrogate it. And then you soon sort of learn as you meet, you sort of explore the area a little bit very early in the game, you learn that because of the conditions of the world having degraded so badly, all the Pokemon and humans are no longer there. They've disappeared, but there may be a way to bring them back by restoring the environment to its former glory. So you must attract new Pokemon by building out these habitats for them. So it could be like a tree with tall grass or like a field of flowers. You have in your Pokedex sort of descriptions of what these habitats are and how to attract Pokemon with them. And then once a Pokemon comes to live on your island with you, you can utilize their skills or sometimes learn their skills. So for example, you as a Ditto can emulate some skills. So I'll tell you out the gate, you get things like a water gun so you can water dry grass, leafage so you can sprout up little patches of grass, you can cut things and you can smash rocks. So this is sort of, you can see the template of where maybe the terraforming Minecraft is going to come in.
Oh yeah.
So you start to make your new home on the island and you know, you make your barren soil into green grass, you build out these habitats, you can also build homes and structures for the Pokemon that you've attracted to your little world. And another key part of the game is obviously gathering and crafting resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the terraforming I mentioned before. You can terraform your environment using these skills. So you can move blocks around, make cliffs, clear ground, that kind of thing. There's also a shop where you can buy basic items and you can learn recipes for items to craft. So this is the bare bones skeleton of the game. I'm not going to tell you too much more because there's a lot to uncover here. But generally, your goal is the more you increase the happiness of the Pokemon living on your island and the more you restore the environment. So you do that by creating a nice environment. You do that by giving the Pokemon what they want to live comfortably. So like they might want a toy, they might want a bed. So this is where the game really starts to sort of unfurl and you realize there are other areas to unlock. There are whole crowds of other Pokemon to attract with different habitats that are in different sort of areas with different resources and loads of features to uncover for you to personalize and kind of decorate your island in very unique ways. So as the Ditto, as Ditto trainer, you have to kind of build this cozy home out and rebuild the world that fell into ruin. And if all the Pokemon can return and live harmoniously and restore the environment, will humans return too? So this is...
That's a charming concept.
It is, and it is so cute. But I would say any tips to people who are playing, who've not yet started, is just take your time. Go slow. It's a big game, and there's a lot of things to unlock, and you'll be able to buy things, trade things, craft things. Like, just take it slowly. I know a lot of people get very in deep with customizing their island. Now, I have no design sensibility when it comes to that. My island is a mess. My island has stuff everywhere. It's got like flower cushions out on the grass, like random trees where they shouldn't be, all kinds of like, I've just got like picnic tables out in the middle of nowhere. But I think obviously online you can go and see some people's islands and they're just incredible. They build out these full paradises with different flowers and shrubs, and that's just on the starter area. Like, this is just that one early area. I'm not even going to get into any of the other areas.
I'm making a note as you speak to go and check Pinterest to see if anyone's got mood boards for their islands up there.
Have a look, because there, and people have recreated things. It's incredible, like the creativity, and I think this is really what it's trying to get going in you. I think it just gives you all these tools to make the game what you want it to be, which is what I love so much. Also, it does reward you for playing it daily, just like Animal Crossing did. It is linked to real-world time, so there's a day and night that in the game. And, you know, you could spend – so there's sort of daily tasks that you can check in and get special furniture. You can trade things. There's also – they do these – Nintendo does these special events. So there's a special event right now where Hoppip has appeared and you can trade this, like – fluffy, like, what do you call it? The cotton things for items. It sounds ridiculous. Like, this is my life now, Rob. This sounds ridiculous, but this is, I'm so deep here. I'm like, I need to get these spores to give to Hoppip so I can get this flower cushion. But this is how they draw you in, of course.
Do your dailies.
I've got to tick off my to-do list, which is, you know, trade honey with the bee lady. I've got to get my spores and trade up for my special items.
Look, I mean,
get my stamp in my little stamp book.
This will be, for me, a familiar process for any gamer.
Yeah.
You know, do your dailies, grind.
Exactly. But it's
off the things.
It's so cute. Like, as I'm going around collecting my lumber, you see, you know, Pokemon playing with the little wind pinwheels that you've put out, or snoozing on the bed that you've put out, and they come up and they interact with you and you can give them gifts. And I'd say another tip as well is, is what you learn as you progress in the game is you have to utilize the skills the Pokemon have. So they can help you with things. They can help you with growing plants. They can turn resources from one thing to another. They can gather things. They can fly you around. These are all things that the game will guide you through. I do think the tutorial system is quite good, but the sooner you learn that you have to leverage the Pokemon and what their
leverage
skills are.
Pokemon.
You've got to leverage the Pokemon.
Exploit the toons.
It will help you reach further goals in the game.
You could use Pikachu to power electrical items or Squirtle to water the plants.
Well, you use Bulbasaur to help you grow things. So any of the kind of grow, like Oddish or Bulbasaur, you've unlocked something in me. I can't go too deep on this. But you know, if it's a flying Pokemon and you're looking for another Pokemon, it will fly you to them, kind of thing. So there's ways the game is going to help you and make your experience easier. You just have to kind of be open to realizing what they are as the game kind of drip feeds you those things. I do think it can be quite overwhelming. Like I said, you know, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of hints online. I'm not going to go into them now, but if you want to get like a quick log of, you know, beginner tips, it will help you navigate the game a little bit easier. And truly, I think that the more you explore and stay tuned in to what the Pokemon are doing and what the tips the game is trying to guide, how it's trying to guide you towards certain pathways and just exploring, just like get out there, look at things, chop things down, craft things, you'll just enjoy the kind of the cozy flow of the game. It really gets you into this nice flow, which is, I think, why there's a lot of chatter about, you know, my 3 minutes before bed playing Pacopia is the best 4 hours I ever spend all day. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's very soothing. I find it same as Animal Crossing soothed people during the pandemic. I think Pacopia is a nice escape.
From World War III.
Kind of. And it's very cute. I mean, obviously, I personally think the fact that the Pokemon are there and you can kind of tailor the gameplay to what Pokemon you have, it's actually giving me a lot more than what Animal Crossing did in a lot of ways.
I'm looking at the graphics in front of me. And
what are your thoughts?
It's very traditional Pokemon.
Yes.
And that's a good thing because that's what you need. It needs to be cute. And
it does trot out the starters and the early Pokemon that people love to kind of get you hooked. They don't throw you, you know, the Pokemon that's like a fan and be like, here's your first Pokemon. It's this weird Pokemon you don't know. And it's actually just, you know, like a table with legs. It's they give you the ones you're familiar with that you can start building out the world and get excited to attract more. Some of them are wild, Rob.
Such things are possible.
Some of the Pokemon is like a mound of dirt. Here's this mound of dirt Pokemon 513 or whatever.
Way beyond what I saw on television.
Oh, it's very expensive. I think, you know, this game, like I said before, is what you make it. You can explore it in however much you want. I know some people play it where they just want to unlock areas and they keep going and going, whereas I've spent so much time on the first area and I've done very little outside of that. My first area is like popping off, but the rest of the game is completely abandoned so far. So it's very self-driven and I like that.
I'm glad it doesn't feature online purchases.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. These special events are just to draw you in and get a community going for the game. I mean, it did draw me into the purchase of the Nintendo Switch 2, but no regrets.
You know, I don't know how this works because I've never bought one of the, you know, consoles or what they cost. How much does it cost to buy this game?
Now, so this is the thing with the Nintendo is all their games are really expensive, especially on release.
Okay.
So you'd be looking, I think it's RRP for Pacopia is like $100.
Do you get $100 if it sounds like you've had $100 worth of entertainment out of it so far?
Absolutely. And I've had it for like less than a week. I mean, I think it is, you know, obviously that's a lot of money, but I do think the size of the game and the fact that even though I do think there is an end goal, there's so much you can do in the game. There's so much possibility in there for things you could craft, unlock, design. Like even the furniture itself, there's so many different ways that you can earn and get these different items and arrange them and build houses and move Pokemon into them and that kind of thing.
Is it open world?
In a fashion, kind of, but it's the same as sort of, it's the amount that a life sim is where it is a sandbox game, but in terms of all the freedom it gives you, you can just kind of keep exploring and you could stay in there for a while. playing around with different
things. Is there
any
capacity for multiplayer?
There is. I do believe you can visit people's islands. I've not done it. You can sort of – I do think they try to get a bit of online community going. I am a hermit and I don't want anyone to see my messy-ass island. It's got like picnic tables sitting out the front of some door and Charizard's like, I can't get inside my house. So the island needs a bit of work before anyone will be visiting, unfortunately. But needless to say, yes, I've been having a lot of fun with Pokemon Pocopia, and rumors are true, it is game of the year.
Wow. It's only March.
It's only March. I mean, I'm calling it right now. No,
you'll still be playing it at the end of the year.
It's going to be as big as Animal Crossing, if not bigger. So let's check in December and see if I still feel the same way. But yeah, sadly, only available on Nintendo Switch 2. So I know that is a bit restrictive. But if you already have the console, you're keen on it. Yeah, I think it's lots of fun.
Okay. Well.
So there you go. I've really taken up all our time ranting about that.
We're going to talk about One Piece Season 2, but we're not going to.
No, I've bumped that to the next show.
I've watched a couple of episodes and I can tell you it's good. Really, good. Really good. But you know that.
And I think it's interesting too, because you and I were saying before, we thought One Piece Season 1 just came out, but it's been several years. Mm. So interesting to see what they've got in store.
2023, late 2023.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might have a track from Basement Spaceman to go out with. Mm-hmm. And I think it's called Luna, which is the last track on the thing, track 11.
Sons of Luna.
Sons of Luna, right, yeah. Okay. And this is, of course, we were speaking last week about Basement Spaceman's new album. This is Apollo 17, 3 Days on the Moon. And this is basically, it's a track called Sons of Luna. So off we go into space once again. And coming up next after this is Astral Glamour. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.